Thank you, Annabelle. Thank you so much for your wonderful show. We love it when you're here at KXLU 88.9 FM in LA, KXLU.com, all around the world. Mystic Pete here with a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. And my in-studio live guest today is George Serra. Hey, George.
Hey, Mystic Pete, how are you?
Mike works. I was here till like 1 a.m. last night because there was a little bit of a technology crisis. So I go down to the parking lot. There's a VW van. I pull out the spark plug wires, hitch it up to a little squirrel wheel, you know, one that they run around in, put the little critter in there, duct tape it all together, got the station running again for the scum bucket of music we call In a Dream. That was last night.
That's great.
Yeah.
Glad it worked out.
So we're going to hear your music.
Yes.
And interview and, you know, our regular fun George Serra Mystic Pete repartee.
Exactly.
But first, I'm going to do a world radio premiere of Disco Lights. That's created by DJ Lady Sinclair featuring Bodacious Thang. That's off of Sasha Robotti's label called Sloth Acid. And this is his remix. And thank you to Rebecca Rose for hooking this all up. Here we go. World radio debut. And then an interview with Barbara Mueller Whitman. That was a world radio debut of Disco Lights. DJ Lady Sinclair featuring Bodacious Thang off of Sasha Robati's album Sloth Acid. Thank you again, Rebecca Rose. So when that blows up, you'll know you heard it first on KXLU. So I'm going to play an interview I did now with Barbara Mueller Whitman, who's the director of the dance at the Odyssey Theater. It's a little mini festival. We talk all about it in the interview. So I think you like it's very interesting. And we go a lot of informative places. And then George, Sarah, and me, we will talk and play his wonderful music and get into our normal shenanigans. Here we go with the interview. Here at the Odyssey Theater on June 5th, 2024, with Barbara Mueller Whitman. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
And you are the...
I'm the curator and the co-producer of the Dance at the Odyssey series.
Beautiful. You've been associated with this theater for years.
Yes, I am.
We have had Ron Saucy and some of the other artists featured on my radio show in the past. And you have a festival coming up starting June 30th until July 14th.
Exactly. We have Dance at the Odyssey in June, July is our summer edition. We also have a spring festival in January, February usually. The dance festival is now in its seventh year. We had a little break during the pandemic, as everyone had. Dance at the Odyssey presents contemporary dance from LA, from all over the States, North America. Sometimes I bring people from South America and even Europe, if it's possible financially. And I think over the years we developed into the, I would say, largest independent dance festival in Los Angeles, presenting evening length work. And I think that the dance community seems to be very excited about that.
It is exciting. And let's talk first about some of the specific performances, and then we'll expand the conversation and talk about dance as an art in general.
Mm-hmm.
The first performance is Saturday, June 29th, 8 p.m. here at the Odyssey Theater. And we're going to see
Mariana Varviani and her company, Salkov Dance. Mariana is from Greece, and she uses a lot of street dance and crump dance vocabulary in her pieces, so I'm very excited about that.
And then on Sunday, June 30th at 2 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yes, that is Briere Tender and Anthony Hernandez. That is an interesting piece. It's called Dear Life. It's a letter to life. Briere worked with us on Letters to Dance. That was a workshop 5 years ago with the German company Däufert & Plischke. And I think she took that idea and developed it further. So she's going to integrate the audience to write a letter to life and combine that with movement.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Where dance has gone. We'll talk about dance in general in a minute, but yeah, so now they're involving the audience in a so-called dance performance.
Yes.
Fine. That's what it is. Then Saturday, July 6th, 8 p.m.
Yes, that is Bernard Brown, BB Moves, and Joey Navarrete Medina. I've seen both of their work. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. How they approach the subject of gender fluidity, and it's definitely going to be very exciting. I haven't seen those two pieces because they're still in process of development, but yeah,
so
looking forward to that.
Legitimate dance these days doesn't have to mean being in tutus and dancing the Nutcracker Suite. It can be very edgy and current and involve important subjects that are very relevant to people's daily life.
Yes, I think you're probably not gonna see any traditional ballet movements or tutus on my stage.
Okay.
Dance for me is, I think my understanding of dance is movement in the widest sense. And it can even be dancing with objects. So it can even go over to figurine or object theater. I think the subjects nowadays in movement or dance pieces, dance theater, that's my German background, Tanztheater, is always telling some story or some subjects that are taken out of their lives, of the choreographers and company's lives, yeah.
All right. Then Sunday, July 7th, 2 p.m.?
Yes, Olivia Liberati, Mafiosi. I've seen that work. It's really funny. It's, yeah, it's kind of the story of a mafia family, and she put translated that into movement, and it's really funny. It's really good.
Wait, hold on a second. So are you saying dance can be humorous?
Oh, it should be. I think there's always some whimsical moment in dance.
Okay.
This is what I love especially. I pick pieces either for a special moment where I either tear up or I laugh or I get goosebumps or I'm surprised. This
okay.
is why
okay.
so someone it's not, is in it's, my festival.
It's not all just serious, very
oh, no.
self-important.
No, okay. no, no.
Okay, good.
Not at all.
Then we have...
Yeah, Intrepid Dance Project is also on Sunday sharing the show with Olivia. Intrepid Dance Project, Jennifer Unison is the artistic director, and she works with people in all from all over the community who love dancing. They're not dancers that have, you know, how do you say that in English? They're not really...
Amateurs or so. Or
yeah, but I don't want to say amateurs. That's
I see.
They haven't studied dance, but...
They're not classically trained.
Yes, that's the word, right. So they're not classically trained dancers, but people who just love to move, love to dance. She was also part of the project with Teufert and Plischke, that Letters to Dance, and was collaborating with us on that. So I brought her back. I wanted to have her here for the festival, too.
Lovely. Then Thursday, July 11th, yes. 8 p.m., Odyssey Theater.
Yes, Leah Zeiger. She, I think because of her personal history with abuse, and living in an abusive relationship, her movements come from the therapeutic side, and yeah, so she's her awareness of the body is very special.
Moving on to Friday, July 12th, 8 p.m.
Yes, very excited. Haston Dance, Chelsea Roquero and Crystal Masteller, I saw them years ago, I think, at a showcase, and I just loved their energy. And now I invited them early on to one of the festivals, and now they founded this dance company, Haston Dance, and are gonna present their first piece.
That is fun. And Saturday, July 13th, 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., you have two shows?
Yes. They wanted to do two shows, which is great. Two different choreographers, Kaitlin Javich and Jana Burritt. I have not seen anything from Kaitlin in person. She was recommended to me. She sent me a lot of her videos, and I just loved the fluidity of her dance and the subjects she approaches. So I invited her to see what she's working on currently. And then Jana, I saw also in a showcase, loved the piece, and she's gonna show it in a further developed form at the festival.
It says, reveals a sense of curiosity, joy and despair, silliness and serenity,
mm-hmm.
revealing fantasies, nightmares, memories and utopias, real and imagined. Okay, we're going on a journey here. Sunday, July Hopefully. 14th, 2 p.m.
Yes. Hélène Boubouliss with Dégagé Rihanna Voix and Jana Moroni. Jana Moroni's piece had just its premiere at the Highway Performance Space. Wonderful work, wonderful dancers, many layers of storytelling. And Hélène Bouboulis is someone I admire very much. She is a dancer through and through, and she went back to dancing now, and she's choreographing her little pieces that show her absolute joy that she can still dance.
All
still
right.
dance. But yeah, that she can dance.
A unique piece.
Yeah.
Well, that's it over 3 weekends. It's just a little quick description of what we're going to see. And now maybe we could talk about dance generally speaking and how this fits into what's happening in the legitimate dance community. I think most people these days think of dance from pop TV shows like You Think You Can Dance, or from seeing dancers on stage with pop singers. But I don't know how much the general public understands the art of dance, and or maybe they think of Swan Lake or the Nutcracker or some kind of traditional popular ballet. But this is one of the arts that are vast, mm-hmm. and there's just not that much education about dance these days, except in very small communities. So let's just talk about maybe where it's come from and where it is in general.
I think because of my background, that is kind of classical theater, spoken word, I'm very much attached to storytelling. And for me, dance is the art form that has perfected storytelling through images and through emotions.
Beautiful. That's a good one. That one sentence, you nailed it. Good. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I think this is what I pick for the festival, and what I would like to have people experience when they come to us and see the pieces. So it's not complicated. You don't have to know anything. You just have to sit in there and watch, feel, think, perhaps a little, perhaps, and yeah. It's really easy, and it's usually wonderful because you find that one moment that will touch you for sure.
So it's not demanding. It doesn't mean you have to sit for hours and understand this obscure thing. It's
no.
accessible.
Yes, absolutely.
So in the 19th century, well, there was ballet, mm-hmm. and that required years and years of training. And then there was, of course, popular dance forms in the clubs and so forth. But ballet was the, as I say, the legitimate way people dance. Then along comes Stravinsky with the Rite of Spring, and suddenly all hell breaks loose, and dance starts to become something very different or much more expanded. And it doesn't require, you know, tutus and certain kinds of education that takes years. It turns into modern dance.
Yeah. I saw a lot of Pina Bausch when I was still in Germany, and I think how she took kind of the classical ballet movement repertoire and kind of took it completely out of context and put it into elaborate stories that had nothing to do anymore with that typical the stories that were typically told in dance, you know, the princess and the whatever.
Right.
So I think this is my background, and this is what I'm also looking for in the pieces I pick. And I saw a lot of choreographers and companies in the 90s and early 2000s in Germany and all over Europe, and people like Jérôme Bell, who did pieces that were called "The Show Must Go On," where they were just repeating the same movement over and over, and to kind of break those expectations you have when you see dance, I think is also so important, because it just gives you this, which I think should performance art do anyway, it gives you that new approach to things, that new, you can see things in a different angle, kind of widens your perspective, widens your imagination. So I think this is what we would like to achieve.
Well, so into the 20th century, there's just been all kinds of movements and
yes.
dance,
yep.
pardon the pun, and 21st century. And it's just explored all kinds of different kinds of movements. Ballet has been a through line. It's still, I think, something that people want to see and people spend years training. Very competitive, demands a certain kind of body type, long neck, long bodies mm-hmm. and so forth, and like years and years of training. Mm-hmm. It can yeah. be brutal.
Oh yeah.
But then there's a lot of dance companies that, as you say, take maybe the more non-classically trained dancers. I think Diavolo, an LA dance troupe, does include those kind of people. And sometimes dance is very provocative or sexual. I saw a ballet by Projokaj, mm-hmm. violent and sexual. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. dignified, mm-hmm. but it was like very compelling mm-hmm. themes, and you could not take your eyes off the stage.
Yeah. I would not say that those people are not, most of them have actually a classical training, and also the modern or contemporary dance training is brutal, and they ask so much from their bodies. So all of those dancers that are in those companies are absolutely excellent, definitely.
Well, how dance has really expanded to every corner of consciousness and style.
Yes. The important thing is, which I so like to see, is that now you have dancers not with a long leg and the the typical shape you were trained to expect. Now you have all shapes and sizes on stage, and that I really, really like, that this has changed and has opened it up for so many people, also in the audience, because they can actually, they see people like them on stage. It's not that ballerina that is kind of, you will never achieve that. So yeah, I think it's great that you have all sizes and shapes and those companies on the stage.
Well, in the visual arts, you've had something called conceptual art emerge, which people love to make fun of because it may be very difficult to understand. Mm-hmm. But that's also happened in the dance community. As you said, dancers may do repetitive movements over and over. And if you want to see Swan Lake, you may not understand what's happening. And it's confusing and maybe upsetting. Like, this isn't what I paid for. So how can we approach these new ideas about dance with an open mind?
When you go to theater, shouldn't you have an open mind anyway? Isn't that what theater or performing art is about? That you are open for a new experience?
No, I want to see Shakespeare. I want to see To Be or Not
yeah,
To Be.
But you can see Shakespeare and completely different than you ever saw it.
Okay.
So, yeah. I think to break up patterns is what performing arts should do.
It's almost a radical notion, but that's always the way art was. Because I think the more traditional arts, we expect to see, I don't know, like people in powdered wigs or like these, like it's like some antique art form. But really, the arts has always been radical
yes.
and rebellious. And
yeah.
I mean, not all parts of it, but there's always been quadrants that force people to think in new
out of
ways.
The box. Yes, definitely. And I think that's it's kind of sad that performing arts or theater became that image that they're kind of
old
dusty
fashioned and staid and,
yeah,
and like
yeah that yeah. it's boring and work and you have to know something to experience it, which is unfortunate.
Well, what if we go to this festival and we see somebody doing a repetitive move it over and over for 10 or 15 minutes and we don't like it? What do we do then?
You should find out what you don't like. I think that's also very important. And then you have to ask yourself, why don't I like it? And actually, repetitive movements are the best. I've seen a piece once, it was Joe Fabian. And there was not, it was like Magritte, a guy with the hat and the, from the back, a column, and a turtle, it was an object turtle, was just crawling over the stage. It was an hour long. And you were staring at that stage, and you didn't see anything but that turtle. And suddenly the column fell over, and you thought, oh my God, I just missed that. And it teaches you so much about you, how you perceive things, how you actually perceive reality. I think, especially pieces where things are repetitive, teach you so much for your daily life, how to look at things more intensely. Yeah, so all for repetition.
So we need to include even the experience of confusion or being uncomfortable mm-hmm. as a way to examine ourselves and Absolutely. Expand and yes. expand our minds.
Yes.
They're not performing this way to be bad dancers, they're doing it to provoke ideas.
Yes. And if we achieve that, it has, the festival has been a complete success. Absolutely. Yes.
And you say this is one of the biggest independent festivals?
Apparently, yeah. I wasn't aware of that, but yes, the dance community is very happy about that possibility to be able to present evening-long pieces, because in LA, you see most of the time showcases. You see a 5-minute blip of something where you think, oh my God, this is beautiful, and then it disappears forever. Because there is no space and time to develop it, no space and time to present it. And yeah, I just thought when I was seeing theater all over LA, I always thought, oh my God, this is beautiful. Where did it go? So I started to reach out to those people and say, please come to the Odyssey, to our festival, and make this into an evening. I want to see where that leads. I want to see where all the other ideas are that you had when you started with this project.
Fall back into it, immerse yourself, and see. So some of these are mm-hmm. emerging choreographers and dancers, mm-hmm. and yeah. some are really seasoned.
Yeah. And most of them are emerging. Some are now coming back, because we're in our 7th year. So where we have built up a relationship, and I want to still see what they're doing. And yeah, very exciting.
And then you'll, in 10 or 20 years, when they're big, famous international mm-hmm. stars, just say, yes. oh, I saw them at the Odyssey
yes.
when they were just...
Perhaps then they have in their bio, my first big, first evening was at the Odyssey. It would be nice.
Tell us about your background in Germany.
I studied theater. I came originally with wanting to be a director. I got into producing super early for festivals, and I just love the energy of festivals and the possibility to see so much talent at this very short amount of time. And then I was producing and being a dramaturg all over Europe.
Reviews and so forth.
And when we came to the United States, I just was able to connect with theaters here and just continue with that career. And when Beth Hogan, my partner in crime, she's producing the dance at the Odyssey, and she had the idea actually to start the whole thing. Yeah, when she gave me that opportunity, it was just a dream come true.
Lovely. Any final words you'd like to tell the people of Los Angeles?
Yeah, if we talk about dance, don't expect something difficult. expect joy and new ideas and also being entertained. It's not something that is bad or should have a bad reputation. It's not going to be complicated. Just immerse yourself in the experience.
So these are evenings to enjoy art, to be entertained, to have fun, and to enjoy yourself.
Yes.
Even
when you have perhaps a little moment where you are surprised. But people shouldn't expect, you know, naked people running screaming over the stage. It's not something that's
gonna
be offensive or something. It's just, yeah, it's...
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
KXLU 88.9 FM in LA, KXLU.com all around the world. Mystic Pete here. We just wrapped up an interview with Barbara Mueller Whitman. She has the mini festival going on at the Odyssey Theater starting on June 29th. Now in studio, George Serra, my dear friend and extremely talented composer, musician, and all-around kind of good buddy. Give us the quick bio, and then let's just get to the music.
Okay, it's very quick bio. My name is George Serra. GeorgeSarrahMusic.com.
S-A-R-A-H.
Yes, with an H.
Okay.
George with a G. Yes. And we'll play some tunes, some old stuff that I've kind of recently been able to, listen to again, to kind of embrace, and stuff that I've always been, I'm proud of the work, but such a traumatic experience being in this creative partnership at the time that I just completely shunned it for, decades. But now I'm going to... Because I'm seeing people post the music on YouTube and everything, and I'm just and then I heard it, and I want to promote it again.
Music can be a difficult birth. It can be very hard.
Yeah, but it's like my early industrial stuff. And the music that got played a lot here at this radio station, and we performed live here quite a bit back in the late 80s, early 90s, so.
I have some of those live recordings, which I play.
Yes, thank you.
From time to time.
Yeah.
All right, what's this piece called?
It's called Cloud CFC, and I'm singing and playing bass on it.
We'll be right back.
Mystic Pete Chronicles. Peter here with George Serra, listening to some classic industrial that you put out some years ago, but yeah. It's having a resurgence, and people are putting up Facebook pages, and you figured, well, why not just, like, promote it right?
Yeah, playing it again, yeah. Like, I haven't played or shared this with people for a while. I started to this year, actually. So there's another DJ here at the station that's played a track, I think. But I mean, back in the day, we got a lot of play, and actually, some of our stuff was on the Psychotechnics compilation that came out in 1991. When they were more just industrial, but we did a live set here in 1989. So we've played at the station, and we used to get a lot. Back then, they used to put songs on 8-track. And put that on rotation. So
right.
So in many ways, the demos got more airplay than the actual physical releases at the station. So if you had a song on an 8-track, you were getting played all the time. And so because our stuff was on demo, this DJ named Tomas Palermo, he was the first guy who did play us. He had a show on this time slot.
Oh.
Called Alternative Outlook, which was also a talk show. It was very progressive in the late 80s, and because we were involved in the animal rights thing, anti-vivisection, he invited us up, and so we talked about, you know, about the cost done and animal research and things like that, and we'd play the music. So, and then he was also the program director, so he actually added our stuff in the 8-track, and then we didn't know, and then the following week we were just getting played all the time, which is
so fun. So,
but yeah, 8-track was the way they would play a lot of their stuff.
Right, it was and on cassettes. A repeating cart.
Yeah, repeating cart, and they would play it. Jeez, it was like rotation, like you would hear at a commercial station. You know, yeah. So you'd hear all the new releases and the punk records and the 7-inches, but then because the 8-tracks, there was only like 20 of them, you would hear that like, you know, a couple of times an hour, and it would just, it was like crazy.
And you've done a lot of things, George Serra, movies and TV and
concerts.
You're very well known for your score.
Radio interviews.
And Mystic Pete's shows, yeah. But you have a beautiful score for Joan of Arc, the silent movie.
Yes.
That's, you're, you know, gotten some really great press over, and, you know, it's a very moving piece. So, I mean, but here it is, this kind of classic industrial, and some of those guys who are into it are, like, really into it. So it has, you know, it has longevity. If you're outside of the scene, you might not quite get it, but the people who like it love it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's you know, I mean, I think by now, it's not so underground, you know? Like, everyone knows Nine Inch Nails and... You know,
but there's a little bit more of the pop version later on, but right, like right.
The old stuff was definitely more experimental.
Right.
And the industrial clubs that I went to, there was one called Lectisternium, and it would happen on Sunday nights, and you would go, and they would actually have tables, and you'd go and you sit down and you watch the band, and I was very much an anti, not, I wouldn't say anti-dancing. There just wasn't, you know, something, you know, because you had these other clubs like Helter Skelter and Control Factory where people go and dance, right? But Lectisternium was an industrial, old school industrial, so you'd hear a lot of like you know, Throbbing Gristle, experimental stuff, and newer acts doing that, but it was more the emphasis of like old school industrial, you know, like people banging on oil drums and things like that. And yeah, making heavy sounds with synths as opposed to guitars.
And even punk in its early days wasn't what we think of as punk. It was very experimental. It could have been anything.
Yeah.
And industrial was kind of like that too. Maybe there was a little bit of crossover too. But anyway, well, let's get to the next tune.
Okay.
Land of, what is it?
Oh, the next one's called Slash and Burn. We just heard Lost Land.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Right.
Track 3.
Okay. This track 4?
Track 4.
Track 4?
Yeah.
Here we go. George Serra.
Thank you. consumption.
George Serra's industrial music. That's a protest song. Explain what that was all about.
It's the process of what an animal goes through from the factory farm to the slaughterhouse to the buffet.
That you were a real activist.
Yeah, that came out in 1992.
For animal rights. That song is about animal rights and the suffering animals go through.
Yeah, like it's, I'm talking about, and it's not like I had to be very imaginative with the lyrics. It's just like, oh, you know, they're priced, they're placed, they're put on a styrofoam tray, there's blood and decaying flesh and all, you know, just kind of telling it as it is.
That's it, all in the lyrics of the song.
Yes.
But it's in industrial music, so sometimes it's hard to appreciate what, you know, the underlying message is, but it's very strong and very controversial.
Yeah, and I had this effect on my voice to make it sound deeper, to kind of make it kind of menacing. But, you know, all this, the CDs did come with all the lyrics and stuff like that and information. And if you looked at, well, the audience can't see it, but I'll just show you, Pete. But
I'm looking at it.
You know, it's like all this stuff about anti-hunting and everything like
liner
that.
Liner notes full of imagery and
facts, yeah.
Messages, social and political messages.
Yeah.
And this is your way of using art to educate and tell people about what's going on, the tragedies happening to animals and in factory farms.
Yeah.
Listen, we are just about out of time, but I want to get to the your track on off of Vicissitudes. Give people an idea of your range. You go just like a lot
this
of directions.
Yeah, this is an ambient piece that's for a film called Her Name Was Joe. That you can, it came out in 2021, and it's you can get it on Amazon Prime and various places, but it's called Her Name Was Joe.
We got about a minute of this. Here
yeah,
we go.
We'll play it.
And
minute.
Then Pat with Alien Air.
Pat with Alien Air.
Thank you.
sorry to cut it off, but we have to make room in about 10 seconds. KXLU, Mystic Pete Chronicles, George Serra, last word?
Alien Air Music.
It's coming up.
Yeah, right now.
There we go.
Unless something happens.
We love you. We love you, George.